This is the Honey Badger Diaries episode 30. I'm back. I took a week off or so, didn't make a podcast. Part of the reason is, as mentioned in the previous episodes, in the intros of the previous episodes, that the urgency has kind of gone away. When the whole coronavirus was sort of escalating everywhere in the world, it was interesting to hear what was going on, what were the different policies, but we've kind of reached the point where it's more becoming the new normal, so sort of these daily different perspectives aren't as interesting anymore. I'll keep making the podcast, just not on a daily basis or on a semi-daily basis. I'll make episodes whenever I feel like it. Try to make at least one a week, maybe a couple a week. We'll see. I should mention, if you want to find the episode so far, you can find these on thehoneybadgerdiaries.com. You can find me on Twitter at AaronVentW. You can find the podcast on Twitter at THB Diaries. Or you can shoot me an email on thehoneybadgerdiariespodcast@gmail.com. Not a lot of news from the Netherlands. We're still in intelligent lockdown. It's been extended, so it'll be a couple of weeks more. Although, next week I think some schools are scheduled to reopen, although there's also some critique on that. For example, there was some recent news coming from Germany that kids are in fact as contagious as adults. There's also been some voices, it seems to be growing a little bit, some voices for containment instead of mitigation, group immunity. There's some traction coming for containment. I'm personally in favor of containment, although ideally I think we should achieve that without forced lockdowns or these kinds of things. I'm a dreamer. I'm an idealist. I think we can reach containment without draconian measures. But with or without such measures, there are some voices now arguing for containment. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Other than that, not much personal news. Been in lockdown, so, you know, lockdown life. It is what it is. My guest for this episode is Ben Ark. He's from Wales, but he's actually staying in the middle of nowhere in Scotland right now to sit out the whole corona thing. He's a pretty amazing tinkerer, developer, hacker, I don't know what best to call it. I made my first Lightning transaction with Ben. That was about a year ago, I think, at Advancing Bitcoin. I had pounds and I wanted Bitcoin, or I had Bitcoin and I wanted pounds or something like that, and I wanted pounds, so I made a Lightning transaction. He had built a small device which acted as a point of sale system or something like that, Lightning wallet anyways, and I sent my first Lightning transaction to him. Later on, we met in Berlin again at the Lightning conference there, and he did make a small point of sale system for Lightning, and they'd been using it in Room 77. And it worked brilliantly. It was just the perfect device for Room 77. It was so easy for the people who work there to accept Lightning transactions without any hassle. Just a few presses of a button and it worked. So he really sort of saved the day for Room 77, I think, in a way. In this episode, we discuss a bunch of things. We get into 3D printing. He's been 3D printing PPE type of stuff. We get into Ben's Lightning project, LNBits, which is a wallet and accounting system for Lightning. And, oh, his name on Twitter. Some people may know Ben as the BTC Socialist. So we get into Bitcoin and socialism. Is it compatible? Is it not? Is it itself a socialist project? You'll hear it all throughout the interview, which you'll start now. These are the Honey Badger Diaries, the Honey Badger Diaries. Ben, welcome to the Honey Badger Diaries.
Hello. And that was a good idea, because often I find that if you do an interview, like, you have like your pre-interview chat, and that's the best stuff. And then you do the interview and you keep referring back to off air, we said blah, 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 blah.
Yes, I agree. I prefer to click record as fast as possible. Yeah, we did. Well, the only thing we said before I hit record is that you grew your hair, and then you told me this was the apocalypse look because there's no hairdressers.
Yeah, we were talking about that off air, weren't we? When we were talking about when I grew my hair off air before, Yeah. There's no hairdressers, so how are you gonna supposed to get your hair cut? The missus can cut hair. She's pretty good at cutting hair. She's cut my hair in the past, but it's quite, getting your girlfriend to cut your hair is quite a traumatic, I don't know, frictious experience. I mean, I get a bit stressed out by that. She gets stressed out, so I also quite like her long hair. I don't really know why. I think when I start, because I was, for a while, I was trying to build a house. So the hair kept getting in my face and annoying me, even if I tied it back. So I got it cut for that reason. But then Bitcoin got in the way of that. So there's not really much point in having short hair at the moment.
Did you finish?
So I started doing something. Pardon?
Did you finish the house?
No, it's just like a half. In some lovely little wood in Wales, there's a half-built wooden house. Not even half-built, like 25% built wooden house. Cowboys, stuff's not even packed away properly. Like, there's just tools lying around, getting all rusty now. I'm in Scotland now. I know your show is kind of focused on the Corona stuff, isn't it? So, it's pretty early on.
Like that, and I'll probably keep that will be a main theme, but I'm sort of diverging into whatever I feel like at this point.
Yeah.
Talking about Corona, every day is getting Corona. Boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is going on? Well, yeah, I don't know where you are.
Yeah. So pretty early on, we got freaked out and we left before, you know, everyone else got freaked out. Which people call panicking, but I actually think the worst kind of panic is denial.
Right.
Just say there's nothing wrong and then just carry on doing what you do, thinking that everything will just take care of itself. So anyway, so we panicked, which I actually think is the opposite of panicking. And moved to Scotland. We have access to like a cottage on a little island, which is pretty basic, pretty minimal, but it's nice. So we were able to use that. So we just moved up here to kind of get away from all the Corona stuff on this little island. And ironically, I think we had coronavirus and actually probably brought it to the island, which I probably shouldn't say publicly. So that was quite ironic. So everything was just left back home. We have a tradition in the UK, in the sort of February half term, schools, year 10, year 11 kids, so like 14, 15 year old kids, they go on skiing trips to Northern Italy. There was all this coronavirus stuff kicking off in Northern Italy, and like all of our school kids were going off in buses to Northern Italy skiing, like for 48 hours sat on a bus, skiing, catching coronavirus, getting back on these buses. These warm buses, you know, all crammed in close proximity, giving each other coronavirus, and then coming back to like the south of England, the south of Wales, which is where I live. So we thought inevitably we're going to have a few cases of corona popping up, which we did. So we kind of scarpered and got out of there pretty quick. But that also meant that the house, which is 25% done, that everything was just left, like the Mary Celeste, you know, even like a steaming cup of tea was left.
So you're in the middle of nowhere on an island in Scotland at the moment.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, so I grew up here when I was very little. It's just like an old croft cottage, which there's lots of in Scotland, in the countryside. So it's almost like an old, really old small farmhouse type thing.
Right.
And when we lived here, we didn't have any electricity or anything like that, or running water. We used to have to get water out of the stream, buckets and things. And there was no one here. Like we used to be here for like, I don't know, a month at a time and not see anybody. There's just no one in the north of the island. I mean, there were, but it was very, very sparsely populated, you know?
Mm.
Whereas now, that I mean, it's more populated than it was. So there are a few families in our little valley, which is nice. So, you know, sort of neighbors and walk past and say hello to.
What am I seeing behind you? Is that a 3D printer?
Yeah, I managed to, the first thing I did when I got here, because I left my 3D printer and I was like, oh man, but I needed a new one anyway because my old one was breaking. I kept having to repair it because I'd kind of worn it out. So I got a new one. I got an Ender, I think it's an Ender 5. But I really like it because the bed moves on this one, whereas with the one I've got, the head moves, and I always feel a bit dodgy like leaving it overnight because a lot of prints you have to leave for like 48 hours. And sometimes the print will come off the bed and the head just kind of, it can kind of get jammed and knock about and hit things, and the thing you've made can smash into things. So that kind of freaks me out. Whereas with this, the bed's like, it doesn't take much to kind of move it down. And it's the bed, so that the head goes back and forth and, you know, to and fro. And then the bed moves down to give it the for the Z axis, which I prefer. And I've had some really nice prints out of it. I was originally, before I had coronavirus, I was originally like, we were practicing printing some like masks and things like that. We had a pretty cool Telegram group going with people like exchanging designs. This is nice. This is like one of those head, you know, the head things. We put the acetate for a screen. Yes. So we're trying to work out like, because there's all these 3D printers around the globe. And they're idle, or people are just printing off goofy stuff off Thingiverse. And it kind of made sense that if we can manufacture something which is useful, then we should explore manufacturing something which is useful. Originally, I had like grand ideas of making like a ventilator, a DIY ventilator, which we started, did some work on. But it's more kind of the little things. So like the face masks, for example, the elastic bands kind of cause a lot of irritation if they're worn for long, long periods of time around the ears. So one of the better prints is just kind of a little clip which clips on the back and holds the elastic things so it doesn't rub against your ears. So there's little things we can kind of like print, you know, which are helpful to emergency services. I mean, in this country at the moment, you know.
So did you design these or are you just printing them? Did you design these PPE things or?
Well, I started designing some little bits. This one's a printed one. That one's a printed one. I did try and design my own, but it wasn't very good. I was actually, so the thing I always wanted to do was the project that I was interested, I called it the ghetto ventilator. So like my philosophy being that, yeah, okay, you know, you want a proper ventilator, which, you know, can regulate a lot of things. But if push came to shove, I'd rather have like a really crappy DIY ventilator, which is maybe keeping me alive, you know, with a little bit of oxygen. So I started building like a pump out of car parts. I actually got so I took the windscreen wiper off my car, and this actually, because it's a strong motor, but it runs a little bit too fast, so it spins a little bit too fast, you know, for the windscreen wipers.
Yeah.
So I needed to regulate that. So I thought, how can you regulate that in a way which is accessible to, you know, someone in some slum somewhere, wherever? And then, you know, the little, this is pretty cool. The little like USB chargers you get for cars.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that has, so the way in which that steps down the voltage from 12 volt to 5 volt, which is your phone, is there's a tiny little IC controller in there. There's a little controller in there. And that little controller has a pin, and you attach a resistor to the pin. And then depending on the resistance of the pit of the resistor, like depends on how much is going to drop down the voltage. So it can range anywhere from, you know, 12 volts down to 0 volts, depending on the resistor. So you get one of these and then you pair it with, because honestly, I was quite ill, so I kind of had to pause all this stuff. Look, that's what I was working on. And then you get these little variable resistors. So you attach a variable resistor to the IC controller, and this, you get that out of your radio. So you get your car radio, you take your little variable resistor, piezo controller, and then you get your little USB, phone charger, and then you get your windscreen wiper motor. And then between those like three items, you've got yourself like a variable motor where you can turn the reps down, which means if you attach like a cam system, so you can turn this into from rotary into, you know, up and down emotion. I don't know the technical word for it. You can get it down to like 12 things a second, a minute. So the ventilators, they range between 12 and 15 breaths per minute.
Right.
It's better if you can regulate that, obviously. So you can achieve that with those parts pretty, you know, and it does a good job. And then you could just regulate it with the little thing. But I mean, I was ill and then I just kind of like, yeah, sort of, I put it to one side for it, but I do need to go back to it. Cause it's a cool project. It's a cool idea.
All of that,
I think I got this heart.
All of that stuff would be in an average car.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and like a cheap car too. Like you could get all that stuff from, you know, if you were in some slum somewhere, you'd be able to find a car or some car parts or some car breakers or skip scrapyard or somewhere, and you could put together like a controllable, and these motors are like really tough as fuck, like you could put together a nice controllable motor system for your ventilator. But then obviously you also need to be able to like produce the oxygen. So I looked into like making oxygen, and then I was trying to find like figure out what I could use for a lung. I experimented with a whole bunch of goofy stuff and it didn't really work very well. So I think that's where I got disheartened. And then honestly, I was like ill, like properly ill, for like coughing and had a temperature for about 2 weeks. Although my temperature wasn't that bad. It was a few days of bad temperature. My boy had it bad. He had like a week of 40 degree, you know, 40 Celsius and coughing as well. But then my cough then kind of went to my chest. So I thought I was having, because there's been a lot in the news about people getting infections in their heart. So I thought I had an infection in my heart. So I was on these pretty high course of antibiotics. That's gone now. I've still got a bit of a cough, but I think I'm all right. I think I'm all right. I'm going to live. So yeah, we had it pretty bad. I mean, I hope it was Corona. It might not be Corona. I think like a bad cold mixed with loads of paranoia can easily feel like coronavirus. So maybe it wasn't coronavirus.
Have you been in contact with the end coronavirus people, the Nexi? Is that what it's called? The Bruce Fenton, Nexi. Do you know
what? No, well, see, I put out a tweet saying, Bitcoiners, we're pretty smart people. Let's build a ventilator.
Right.
And then I got the Telegram group together. We started like exchanging ideas. And then a few days later, Bruce Fenton put his thing up and he's like, I'm leading this blah, 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 blah. And I was like, you're leading bollocks. Like, it should, I mean, it's cool. And I crack on, like, good. Yeah, build something smart, get smart people together and collaborate and help where you can. But I just don't like the idea of people leading. So I just kept the Telegram. It was almost at that point, it's a bit like, well, should we just join their thing? And then we were like, well, let's just keep this Telegram group open. It's been cool. Like, we've exchanged ideas and stats, and we've got some some medicine folks on there, and some doctors and some engineers. And it's mostly just like exchanging designs for things like, you know, ventilator masks and whatever else.
Have these been used?
Pardon?
Are these PPE things, they're being used somewhere?
I think there was some movement. I think it's a scuba diving snorkel thing.
Yeah.
Which covers the whole face.
Yeah, and there was a printed
additional. Yeah, you could print the top of it.
Right.
Yeah, the valve. Yeah. So I think the valve was is one of the most useful things which had been more useful thing which has been printed. And then little things like the clip for the mask. These things are being used, I think. The visors. I think they're being used. So yeah, I mean it's even if it's, I don't know, like even if it's completely futile. And you know, the open source community of makers and tinkerers can't contribute anything. I don't think that's true. I think they probably will contribute something. I don't think it doesn't hurt to have lots and lots of people thinking on a problem, seeing if they can try and solve a problem, because you know, who knows, they might come up with a decent solution, or they might come up with some design which is really helpful and useful for people. So I don't think it's entirely for you, because I mean ventilators they're really complicated bits of machinery. But then there's non-invasive ventilators, and they're a little bit more achievable, I think. Obviously, an invasive ventilator is really hard, but a non-invasive one, which we kind of have like the face mask and pressurize the lungs, they're something which could be built, you know, in a DIY way. I mean, like us in Europe, and then you know in the US or whatever, and some of the countries where we've got like healthcare, we have access to healthcare, like. You know, there's a shortage on machines and ventilators and materials and PPE, but it's more the poorer countries, you know, like the which don't really have any healthcare, where something like the ghetto ventilator, for example, like a non-invasive ghetto ventilator someone can knock together, could be useful for somebody.
Did this replace your Bitcoin tinkering, or are you still doing that as well?
No, well, I was just like, I felt pretty sorry for myself, and I felt a bit poorly. So I kind of went back to doing some Bitcoining stuff as well. So recently we've done LM Bits. We brought LM Bits. It was me and a couple of other developers. So that was a project, like it came out of, have you seen LM Bits Have you played with Alan Bits?
I don't think so, or maybe I have, but there might be people listening that don't know what it is. So
yeah,
to just explain.
Very recently. So you can demo it on alanbits.com. But there's also, it's a free and open source project, so you can run it yourself on your own node. So it's just solving a bunch of problems I had. Like, I made my ATM, and then I had to give my ATM access to my wallet with all my money on to pull funds to give to other people. And I didn't want that. Like, I don't want my ATM, which someone could like pack into.
What do you mean, like your admin ATM?
Yeah. So my, you know, like a DIY. So I, you know, as you know, for people who don't know, I did like a DIY series making little Bitcoin point of sale terminals and playing around with little microcontrollers, sending and receiving Bitcoin over Lightning Network. All of it's pretty much over Lightning Networks. So like I made a little sweep machine, vending machine. I don't think I did a tutorial for the vending machine. But then one of the things I also built was an ATM. So you put coins in and it gives you a little LN URL. You can scan it with your phone. You get your Bitcoin. It's a cool experience.
That's cool. I haven't seen that one.
You're not seeing that one? I didn't release a tutorial. I just released the project itself because it's still not right. I want it to be, because I didn't have the right box. It took me ages to get the right box to find the right box. Because when I do the tutorial, I want it to be like under $40 type project, you know? And also not hard. Like, you should be able to make it with just hand tools. Whereas the box I was using is like a security box for the ATM. I mean, obviously you want it to be secure, but it was a big security box for the ATM. And it involved like getting an angle grinder and like grinding away at it for like hours trying to cut holes in it, and they're all goofy looking holes. So I've moved to like an aluminium box, which is a cheaper box. You can actually cut it with like a really sharp knife. I mean, these little things that, you know, that they're for a bar or a cafe or something, like a novelty item to kind of get people interested in Bitcoin. They dump their change and they get some sats back.
That's cool. I like that. Okay, so that's the ATM, and you were telling me about LN Bits.
Yeah, so the ATM, if anyone wants to check it out, it's called the Fossa. So free and open source ATM. So I thought it was a pretty cool name. There's Monask Bar in Newport, which is a Bitcoin tapas bar, which one of our Bitcoiners in Wales runs. And it's a great bar if anyone's in Newport. And obviously, there's no lockdown. Go check it out. And we had this idea of trying to make like
There's no lockdown in Wales?
No. Everyone's out of quarantine, then go to his bar, spend some money. Right. But we were trying to work out, like, you know, so one of the problems you have like in a bar, for example, is your channels get all off balance because you've got a lot of incoming and you've got no outgoing. So we thought if we had the ATM, we could like encourage outgoing to try and balance channels. And then maybe I had this sort of scammy idea that you could say, okay, you get like a 25% discount at the bar if you pay in Bitcoin. And then they'll have the ATM, but the ATM is like, there's like a 25% charge to convert to Bitcoin. I suppose the wise thing to do is just come in with your own Bitcoin and then pay with Bitcoin at the bar. But anyway, there's the ATM project's cool, but in order for it to spend funds on your Lightning wallet, it has to have, say if you're using a custodian like OpenNode, it has to have access to your admin key for your wallet, for your one wallet you have. Or if you're running your own node like LND or C Lightning, then you have a wallet, like a Lightning wallet on there, and it has to have access to that Lightning wallet in order to spend those funds. So it just means that if anyone gets the ATM and then manages to, you know, hack into my crappy little microcontroller, which probably isn't that hard, and pull off the macaroon and the endpoint, then they could just like start paying themselves money. They could take all your money. So I wanted like a way of like a piece of software I could run, connect it to a node, and then make little wallets, lots of little wallets, which all have their own little API keys. And then say for my ATM, there's like $50 on there. And then once my ATM's like $10 away from running out of money, then, you know, I can send more money to it. Or I know a couple of $100, whatever, but a small amount of money. So if someone gets access to that wallet, they can't take all my money, you know, on my Lightning node. So that was the first kind of idea for this, just a bit of software which did that. And then I also made the Sinclair faucet, which was like an LN URL, an LN URL faucet demo. So you could like get a QR code, you scan it, and then you get some sats. You wait 30 seconds, you can scan it again, get some sats. And lots of people kept saying, oh, you need to release the code. But the code was so sloppy and horrible. And a lot of it was, in fact, just like building in the ability to send Bitcoin over Lightning and connect to a node to do that. So I thought, well, it'd be nice for that kind of part of the stack of development if there was just like an off-the-shelf solution people could use. So there's that element too. And there's also the element of having like an Insta wallet. So like, you know, have a QR code at conferences and meetups and people can scan it and then they can, you know, get like an Insta wallet on their phone, which we had at Chaos Communication Congress. And you could even like, you know, with this little app this guy made in the browser, you could use the camera on your phone to scan invoices. So you could scan a little QR code, get a very basic wallet, and then scan another QR code and pay for something. And that was a nice experience too. So I want like an Insta wallet, something you don't have to download, something which you can do all those things. So that was kind of Alan Bits. And then I also wanted to build in like other functionality, but I thought I didn't want to overwhelm the user. So they go in and it's just really confusing. I thought you start off with a basic wallet and then add functionality as extensions, you know, like WordPress, for example, like the WordPress of like a content management system for your Lightning wallet. And then also make it easy for people to build extensions, which is pretty cool. So we've got there now. We released it version 0.1 last week, and it works. And like, I'm building an extension today. This guy reached out and he's like, he really wants an easy way to generate wallets because I think he's doing a computer game thing, and he wants his users to have wallets in the computer game. And he wants to do it through an API, just like call LM Bits and then generate a wallet. And then the user uses that wallet then. And then he can like pull the transactions and he can send and receive money on behalf of the user. And the wallet's just kind of stored in his. So he's running LM Bits himself on his own node. And then he can make custodial wallets just for his computer game, for his users. In fact, I've just been making the extension for that today. So an easy way to kind of like, through an API, like make wallets, and then
how come a user wouldn't have to download anything then?
Well, the user who's just got the game, well, say if they're playing say if they're playing a computer game, and he wants as part of their, you know, user profile for them to have a Lightning wallet. So he's got options, isn't he? He can either build it into the game himself, which some people are doing, and they're like building in full, sneaking in neutrino nodes into Steam, which is cool. But I mean, if you're just trying to make a little game and you want users to be able to keep track of their funds and then send and receive Bitcoin, like, you know, sending Bitcoin and then like pull it out through an LNUL, for example, then I mean, this thing just kind of takes care of that. So all he's got is his node. He downloads and runs LM Bits, and then his software then just talks to his node and says, I need a new wallet. I've got a new user. Give me a new wallet. Gives him a new wallet. And then he just uses that for the user. And then the wallet stuff's kind of taken care of on the node. And the cool thing is as well, it can run over Tor.
The user would see it in game then.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know his game, so I don't know what it is, but the user, his users, they'll have in that whatever game he's making, they'll have like a wallet and they'll have a balance and all that data can be like taken care of by LM Bits. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I had like a crazy idea for marketplaces as well, for like a, you know, like an open bazaar. Well, I won't go into it too much because it's a big rant, but I had like an extension, like an idea I wanted to do test on some for, you know, for like a censorship resistant market. And I was able to make like knock up an LM Bits extension for that. And it took me like, you know, a couple of days. And that's cool. Like you can, a lot of the hard work in making a Lightning application is now taken care of by a piece of very light piece of Python software. And you can just concentrate on the extension. So I'm kind of building in the extension so you can access them through LM Bits. But say that guy, for example, he could just literally build that functionality and not even have like a front end to the extension if he's doing it all through an API. I'm pretty excited about it. So it's a pretty exciting piece of software, and people are enjoying it, and they're like, they're getting a lot of use out of it, and developers are using it, and we've got like people, we've had a couple of good contributors kind of join since we went to version 0.1. Even got a Blockstream dev as well who's kind of joined in. Nice.
Where do people find this? LM Bits?
So if you check out lmbits.com, That's, you know, you can go on there, make an instant wallet, send Lightning Bitcoin over Lightning Network, and then you can play around with the extensions. There's a really cool point of sale extension actually on there as well. You can play around with some of the extensions which are on there. There's some information about building your own extension, but there's also a link to the GitHub, so you can go check out the GitHub. And then to download and run it yourself on your own node, it's like 4 lines of code, you know.
Right.
So it's very easy, very lightweight, very easy.
So Ben, the other topic I wanted to ask about, you're the BTC socialist. That's your Twitter handle.
I wonder when we get there.
How does a socialist get into Bitcoin, Ben?
Huh?
Well, I mean, how does a socialist get into Bitcoin?
To me, I was like, I was a disheartened socialist before Bitcoin. You know, I mean,
aren't all socialists?
Where to start on the rant? But you know, I've always been like a lefty. You know, I've heavily involved in trade union, my teaching union when I was a teacher. I like things like, you know, universal access to healthcare, education, my roads. You know, a lot of the things I most value in life are things which are publicly paid for, parks, those sorts of things. You know, I like that stuff, and I don't like the way coercion which is involved in order to make those things happen.
Right.
But I like people having access to those things. Pardon?
Right. Well, I was just going to ask about that. So do you, because I had a discussion with Giacomo on these kinds of things in this podcast as well. You know, yeah. how would a libertarian society...
Like playgrounds of violence. Public playgrounds of violent institutions.
I asked him, how would a libertarian society deal with the coronavirus? Who would pay for the hospitals? And I think if I paraphrase and simplify his answer a bit, he said, you know, it would be paid for by donors, by people that are willing to pay for it.
Bollocks.
You don't buy that.
No, it's bollocks. It's bollocks. There's some problems. Like, I get blamed for being a utopian, you know. Oh, he wants this utopian, like, socialist dream, which isn't ever going to happen. You're just going to end up with another Mao or another Stalin. And then and quite often, like, people get, you know, triggered in the sort of way that, like, I was responsible for the Khmer Rouge or something. There's some the true utopians of this world are the ones who think we found the answer. And the answer is in the capitalist mode of production. Production, the way humans produce things over history has changed. Slavery, we had slavery, and then, you know, your slaves die, you can't replace them because you killed them all, so you have to go get more slaves, and then more of them die. It's a problem. So you end up with feudalism. So, you know, you have serfs and they don't die, you know, they have enough, they're able to sustain themselves, have kids, so you have like a constant source of cheap labor production. But then after a while they get educated and they start demanding rights, and you end up with democracy, and that sucks. And then all of a sudden, so now you have, you know, employment, so you employ people to make stuff for you, to produce things for you, and this happened over a long period of time. And to think that now that's the end of history, we found the answer, it's just free markets, just free market everything, you know, it'll fix everything, it'll fix coronavirus, it'll fix global warming, it'll fix absolutely everything. I just don't think it's true. And I don't think that I'm saying that socialism will fix everything. I'm just saying that I want to explore decentralized modes of production. Mm. I want a free and open source society.
Well, hang on. Isn't capitalism a decentralized mode of production? What's the difference? What are you looking for?
Well, I mean, it's the capitalist mode of production. So the capitalist is the person who owns the mode of production. And then the people who are employed by the capitalist, you know, there's this idea that the definition of the capitalist mode of production is the capitalist owning production. So the whole system is geared towards benefiting that centralized party. It works. It's great. Like, you know, it's the reason I can go to the shop and buy an avocado.
But why do you call it centralized?
You know, whatever else. Like, and I have, you know, and it pulls, it's like connected the whole world through trade routes, and it's incredibly efficient at producing things, and it works. But to think that it's the answer for absolutely everything.
But why do you call it centralized? Can't everyone be
centralized? So you have, you know, if it wasn't centralized, you wouldn't have a Jeff Bezos at the top of Amazon.
Well, Jeff Bezos wasn't around 20 years ago, for example. It was someone else who was on top of the pile, and then Jeff Bezos came along.
I mean, so you could say the same about feudalism and slavery. There's always someone at the top. Like, you can work yourself as a slave, you know, Spartacus, you can be freed, and then you too, what you one day can become the slaver. I mean, I don't want to compare capitalism to this. So all I think is that we will, as the human beings in time, will explore other modes of production. I think we are exploring other modes of production. I think for an open, I mean, so if you look at software,
proprietary software. Let's get there in 1 minute.
Proprietary software was paid for and managed by the person who had the capital, by the capitalist. Whereas people didn't like that. They were like, hey, we want control over this software. We want to be able to change it. And we don't want you to have like proprietary control over it. We want control over production. And then the developers said, well, we're going to work together and we're going to make our own software for an open source software. So we are producing things which are, you know, free and open source, decentralized, socialized. That way of producing things, it can work. So I mean, I'm not saying that, who knows what's in front of us historically, you know, in the future, but to think that just free markets will fix everything just doesn't make any sense to me. And then also to think that Bitcoin, I mean, so if you want Bitcoin to be valued by the whole world and to be the backbone of future society, whether you like it or not, there will be people who align their ideologies with it. You know, who will say that Bitcoin, I can, you know, align my ideologies with Bitcoin because it's free and open source software, because the users control how the protocol works, as opposed to someone at the top, a capitalist, a slave or a fascist, whatever you want to call them. So, and I think it should be encouraged as well. There's no harm in all these like anarchist lefty hacker types piling into Bitcoin. I mean, yeah, like the neoliberal libertarian, they were the first to kind of see value in Bitcoin as a sort of digital gold or whatever, a non-government store of value, so you're not putting your money in some banking system. But it doesn't mean that other ideologies won't be able to align with Bitcoin. And I don't see why there's a problem there, you know.
I have no problem with that at all. I do think that free markets are more decentralized than you make it seem, which is the reason I mentioned the upwards mobility.
Are they though? Because free markets are inevitable. I mean, first you got to find a free market, which is hard to do.
Sure.
Like whether one even exists. And then, you know, remember all those times when you were young and you played Monopoly and you didn't have a government controlling or manipulating the Monopoly board? But it was very hard to find an equilibrium among the other players. It usually ended in a monopoly, which is in fact why the game Monopoly was made, was to show that a free market ends up as a monopoly. If you have a free market, then the bigger company can have more division of labor. They have more, there are some benefits to being a smaller company where you can, you know, provide services which may have a little bit too much friction for a bigger company. But with the way division of labor works, I mean, Adam Smith wrote about this, that you end up just with more and more of a monopoly over production by a small collection of people. And Adam Smith said the only way to get around that was to have government, you know, intervening and then trying to make a free market or trying to preserve a free market. So I'm not saying I'm for that, but I'm just saying that there's this myth that a free market exists. I think the only way a free market exists is by a lot of intervention. I don't think if you just let markets take care of themselves, that you'll end up with a free market. I just think you'll end up with a complete monopoly.
Well, I think the dark nets are a pretty good example of really free markets with no state regulation whatsoever. And they seem to function reasonably okay. There's exit scams here and there, but you know, in general, the reputation is valuable and trade works.
But I mean, isn't that partly because, so they can't, because they're out of the remit of just law, they have to be, you know, dark. They can't be out in public.
Mm-hmm.
It means that, well, look at the marijuana industry in California or wherever else in America. You know, at one point, I mean, I'm against the legalization of marijuana just on this one basis, that all that money was going into, it was fairly decentralized. There were lots of local drug dealers who were bringing a lot of money into impoverished communities, which didn't have access to any other industries, really. Like, it's one of their main industries, one of their main sources of income. Now, all those local producers, all that money is just going, like, it's being centralized. And you're ending up with a couple of big Koch brothers of growing weed. So, like, if in the drugs industry and in dark markets, if it were allowed to be out in the open, wouldn't they just centralize? Wouldn't they just turn into big monopolies?
Well, even if that's the case, it's clearly preferable by the consumer, right? So it's benefiting someone, at least. It's benefiting the consumer, and everyone is both, right? Or at least everyone's also a consumer.
So, like,
well, if it wouldn't, it wouldn't benefit them, then why would they buy it? Then they could still buy it from their drug dealer on the corner of the street, right? Clearly,
there's a lot of things like wouldn't be. So in this myth of a free market, which we don't have, I mean, the free market, the private sector doesn't pay for getting rid of waste, for public infrastructure, for delivering a lot of these goods to people's doors. It doesn't pay for a lot of things, so a lot of these benefits we get from a free market, they're not actually parts of the free market. They're parts of a publicly owned market, a publicly owned sector. I forgot where we were. Sorry. I have a sip of whiskey.
Well, I forgot as well. So that's not very helpful. I'll agree.
No, it was what you're saying. I had a very valid point, but then I went into a little tangent about free market, private sector making.
Well, I was arguing that clearly the consumer thinks it's a benefit if it's produced.
Oh, right. Yeah, the consumer. Well, so again, regulation, like there's so much regulation out there so people don't get scammed. People aren't like hypnotized into buying shit through fucking weird advertising. I think there's a more, the value is quite complex. I don't subscribe to the Austrian, the amount of how much something costs is its value. I just don't believe that's true. I think that value can be manipulated by market mechanisms like branding, for example.
Doesn't branding just increase the value? That's what an Austrian would argue, right? If value,
well, they would argue, yeah, they would branding. Argue with social, yeah, whatever. So I just think there's if you were, why don't we have these free markets? Why? I mean, is it because governments just want to control everything and they want to take all the money? I mean, I just don't think a free market exists. I think it's just a myth, and it can never exist. As soon as you have a free market, it will just turn into a monopoly.
I've actually never played the game Monopoly, so I literally don't know what the rules of the game are. But
As a thought experiment.
The thing with capitalism is that the pie can grow. You're all growing the pie, and I don't think that's the case with the game Monopoly. So that's why it's not a very accurate reflection of real capitalism. But I've never played a game, so I'm not even sure.
That's a very true point, that capital needs to continue to expand, which is part of our problem, isn't it? It's like part of the reason we're due a Great Depression is because that capital needs to grow, or else it contracts.
No, that's monetary policy that's demanding growth. That's central banks.
It's not monetary policy. It's monetary policy, which is aiding growth so we don't have recession and depression. That's the... So right. Keynes, bust, boom, Great Depression, war, Great Depression, war, fascism, rise of fascism. Keynes was like, well, let's try and ease this shit out by printing money and fair weather surplus recycling. So you take some of the surplus which you have in the good years and then you use it in the bad years to try and keep
production moving. Forget about socialism. Do we have a Bitcoiner here who's defending Keynes, who's saying that was a good idea?
Man, like, you can't claim to be a student of economics without appreciating Hayek, Mises, Keynes, Marx. Like, you need to read all that shit, all of it. Keynes was the man with two brains. He predicted the Second World War. All the stability and peace we had from the end of the Second World War until now could be could be Keynes. It could be Keynes which caused that.
Yes, until like, now. And let's see what happens now.
Well, let's see what happens now. But maybe, the Great Depression was before Keynes. You know, when we had like a gold standard.
But no, that's not what Hayek would argue. Hayek argued that was central bank policy that caused the boom of the 20s, which inevitably was followed by the bust of 29.
And then war. Which is what happens. And it's probably what we can expect as well when we have an inevitable depression from this, you know. But no, Keynes, after the Second World War, the reparations, he was on the committee for the reparations against the Germans. And we demanded a huge figure from the Germans. And Keynes said, there's no point having a debtor who can't pay their debt because they just won't pay it. You're not going to get any money. You're going to piss off the debtor. And it's going to cause some more. It's going to lead to more conflict.
He wrote
a book called The Reparations, the Consequences of the Reparations of the Second World War or something, of the First World War, in which he predicted that there was going to be the Second World War. Like he outlined it and said, we need to change our economic policy towards Germany or else we're going to have another war. And then we had another war. He worked like through the First World War and the Second World War to try and stop conflict. He just didn't want conflict. Like this is a wartime person. The most important thing is that we don't have like hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people shooting the shit out of each other. That sucks. And a lot of that is down to economics, which is why when he went to Bretton Woods and they came up with a new monetary order of the gold-backed dollars, the charter of Bretton Woods was, okay, we don't want to have another Second World War. We need to make a stable economic world order to stop that from happening. And then Keynes had a very good proposal, which wasn't, no one listened to.
The Bancor.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can't blame Keynes for what's happened. Keynes died. So they had the meeting in Bretton Woods, and then Keynes got incredibly ill trying to tell everybody how dangerous it is to have, you know, the US dollar as a world reserve currency. And then they went back to have another meeting where Keynes was going to argue his case again, that they needed a medium of exchange, which was decentralized, wasn't owned by one country, or else they'd end up with more conflict. And he died of a heart attack, like trying to plead that case. What a guy. Like, and we didn't listen to him, and we had our gold-backed dollars. I agree that, like, you know, obviously I'm not sticking up for Keynesianism as a whole, but I am saying that John Maynard Keynes, the economist, was a great man, a very clever guy, and he has some very valid points. And the Bancor, if we taken his advice and used the Bancor, then maybe we would have had a lot more stability and peace around the world. We would have had like the little skirmishes and conflicts caused by the US, for example. I'm not saying if you read Keynes, you then can't read Hayek and you can't read Mises. Of course you can. You read them all. And read Marx too. And Adam Smith and David Ricardo.
There's another topic you touched on, which I want to get into, because I do agree with you on that point, I think, is that Bitcoin is often presented as sort of, and I do think it comes from that tradition, the tradition of sort of free banking, free market for currencies. You know, Hayek wrote about it, the denationalization of money. Bitcoin comes from that tradition in a big way. At the same time, what Hayek was describing was really private currency. So a currency owned by
private companies. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And Bitcoin is something very different. And I think that's sort of where I start to agree with you, that there's actually something weirdly socialist about how Bitcoin is actually being developed and how it's actually coming into existence.
Well, the users control it, don't they? Like, yes. Who controls Bitcoin? As we saw with, you know, the OASF, SegWit, like the users, they're the ones who control. And that was, in fact, I think for most people, that's when they sort of really, Bitcoin really proved its use, its value, was the fact that actually the users do control it. It's not owned by the miners, it's owned by the users. and yes. we control how it works. Which is, and I always say it, like, Google, socialism defines socialism. It doesn't say, you know, Stalin and, you know, horrible government tyranny. It's that the means of production, the means of manufacturing, distribution, and production is owned or regulated by the community as a whole. And I think with Bitcoin, the way in which it works is regulated by the community as a whole. It's owned by the community as a whole. And its distribution is regulated by the community as a whole. And you may not think so. You might be like, well, no, actually, my Bitcoin is my Bitcoin. But Satoshi's coins, for example, what are we, are you Googling socialism, define socialism?
No, I'm Googling that quote or that part of Marxism where, you know, everyone contributes what they can. What's that quote? You can tell
No, me. Oh, you're talking about, that's communism. I mean, that's Marx's. So, to each their own means. Oh, sorry, what is it? You've got me so excited. each to their own ability, each to their own means.
Yes.
So, i.e., you have access to the commons, the public commons, as much access as you want, use it as much as you want. But you contribute to your own ability. Where can you contribute? You can tell your friends and family about it. You can do podcasts. You can write goofy software, try and make ATMs, like whatever. Like, you contribute where you can, to each his own means, to each his own ability. That's the, again, you know, you talk about communism and it just triggers people, and they think of North Korea and they think of Stalin. Marx's, well, in fact, at that time, socialists' understanding of what communism was is a far off concept, you know, which is, I mean, socialism's a far off concept. Capitalism's a far off concept. We haven't done capitalism yet. Like, we've still got like crony capitalism. We haven't even got proper capitalism yet. We've got to get there before we can get to the socialism, and then eventually maybe to the point where you have access to whatever you need and then you just contribute where you can.
Right.
But in some little areas, little bubbles of existence, you know, free and open source software, Bitcoin, is one of those examples. Like, you contribute where you can, you have access to the thing as a whole. As a side point as well, I also think that when you have a public utility or a commons, then you also have, it's not just a case of contribute where you can, you know, just for fun. It's almost like a responsibility to maintain that utility or maintain that resource, that natural resource. And I think a lot of us feel that urge. Like, we have all this stuff given to us from Bitcoin. And then we just kind of feel this urge, like, we need to help it grow. Because we're accessing and we're making use of the protocol.
Yeah.
And I think that falls in line with, I mean, I wish people would think a little bit more like that when it came to natural resources, for example.
I guess a libertarian would argue that people do it for their own self-interest, maybe. But
which is bollocks.
I don't buy that. You know, you have the tragedy of the commons that's falling completely apart in this case.
I mean, you can do it for your own self-interest, but everyone voting in a cooperative is doing it for their own self-interest. Like, you know, if you're in a cooperative and I vote for a certain way that cooperative is going to work, it's because I want it to benefit me. So you can still have self-interest in like, you know, a socialist structure. I mean, look at that famous email conversation between Hal Finney and Satoshi, where, I mean, a lot of people use this as evidence that Satoshi was probably a libertarian, but I think quite the opposite, because I think Hal Finney says that, like, something like, despite the economic incentive alone, just through altruism or something, people will run nodes. Altruism alone, or the system could be supported by altruistic node running.
Yeah, well, that's Hal who said that, right? I think.
Yeah, Hal Finney said that to Satoshi, and then Satoshi said, "Oh, well, I'm not into politics or whatever, but, you know, I can see why it would appeal to the libertarian mindset." And I don't really see how that's libertarian. The altruism will.
Oh, but is that in the same context? Aren't you mixing up different?
Yeah. Because he says Hal Finney says altruism alone will, I don't know, the network be able to run on altruism or whatever. Oh. And then Satoshi then says, "Oh yeah, well, you know, I don't know much. I don't really know much about politics or something, but I can see how it would appeal to the libertarian."
Right.
But I can't see how.
So I guess his argument was that libertarians would act altruistically out of ideology. Which, you know, libertarianism doesn't prevent people from acting.
Being altruistic, no, yeah. That's true. Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't. Game theory, you know, if they're... It depends what sort of libertarian you're talking about. Like, I'm a libertarian, you know. I call myself, I want liberty for people. Libertarianism historically was always a leftist tradition until Rand and Rothbard then sort of co-opted the term for the right. So I call myself a libertarian. I want liberty for people. You know? I want to pursue ways of having more liberty for more people.
The term libertarian was leftist?
Yeah. Check it out. Wikipedia, second paragraph. It was co-opted by the right. Where did it come from?
You know,
60s. Pardon?
So where did it come from?
It's all the French fraternity, liberty. What's the... can't remember the three things.
Or who did it come from?
Yeah, I think it was it Proudhon who talked about, who called himself a libertarian? Or who was he called himself? It was someone on the left who first, like, no, Proudhon was the guy who first called himself an anarchist. He's also on the left, by the way. Can't remember the name of the person who first sort of coined the phrase.
But let me ask you something else then. Why do you think... Because, yeah, there is also left anarchism, and I think especially in Europe that's bigger actually than the sort of free market libertarianism. Why haven't they embraced Bitcoin? Why isn't the left on board with Bitcoin if you are?
Well, I mean, this is why I need to wave that flag, see. And game theoretically, all those, like, you know, self-interested libertarians out there, they should encourage me to go out and, like, hoodwink my friends into liking Bitcoin. Or my lefty friends. But no, I think it's, they look at Bitcoin and they just see greed and they see Lambos and they don't understand that it's like a free, I mean, lefties are pretty bad with computers, to be fair, which has always amazed me, but it just seems to be something about lefties, seems to be crap with computers.
Bad with computers, bad with economics.
Yeah, but if you go to Chaos Communication Congress, the Bitcoin camp, whatever you call it, that's like a small table. They're fairly alienated from the rest of the Bitcoin, from the rest of the chaos community. So you've got 20,000 hackers and there's like 15 Bitcoiners sat around a table.
Yeah.
Like the weird fucking Bitcoiners in the corner.
I've been there once, maybe 4 years ago or something like that. And yeah, there weren't even 15 then. There was maybe 5. And you know, that,
which is
No one at the whole conference cared about Bitcoin at all.
And none of the bars accept Bitcoin. None of the places you can go and eat accept Bitcoin. And you're like, dude, this is free and open source money, which you can like send without a trusted third party through networks, these really cool networks. And they use all this amazing protocol development stuff. Like those guys,
I think the
should
problem,
be excited about Bitcoin.
Yes, they should be. Well, I think the problem, Ben, is that a lot of these people are against money in general. Like they're philosophically against all money.
Yeah, because money's evil.
Yes, exactly. You know, at the same
time, Bitcoin money isn't evil.
At the same time, they do use money, but
yeah,
you know, if you present a new money, it's still money and it's evil, and they don't want anything to do with it. But you know, it's like you said, they still have bars where they accept money. So why not at least accept open source money then, if you're gonna accept money anyways? But I think that's the reason they just don't like money. Therefore, you know, it shouldn't corrupt open source philosophy or something like that. They want to keep it out of there, I think. That's sort of the.
But I mean, that's one of the beauties of, go back to Marx. Marx said that money needed to be a commodity and not just, he was against fiat.
Marx was?
I mean, whether fiat existed as we would understand fiat to be now, but he believed that any good money needs, no, it did. And he was against it. He didn't like the state. He didn't like the state controlling money. He believed money would have to be a commodity. Good money is a commodity for,
really?
Which so I agree with.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he agreed with Austrians on that one. I guess the Austrians came
It makes sense.
Later, but yeah.
No, it makes sense. But I mean, like I said, read them all, you know. But like this idea that Marx was a statist and he wanted, you know, state control over everybody is wrong. Marx hated state. He wanted the state to wither away.
This is a
famous, the withering of state. which is a famous Marxist sort of idea that if you had... So to me, it all goes back, and I think I said this quote to you once before, and it's, who is it? Saint Simone in, I think it's like 1570 or something. He said that soon the art of governing men will be at an end and it'll be replaced by a new art, the art of administrating things, or administration, the art of administration. A few whiskeys in, sorry. So soon we won't have to control people and tell them what to do. That'll, the I don't know, the apparatus of society, which is kind of taken care of by very well-designed systems. So soon you won't have to have like a central bank issuing money and controlling money. You'll have something which will kind of control itself, the art of administration. I can't remember where I was going with that, but I really like that quote. And I think it's very, very relevant for Bitcoin.
The autonomous money machine.
Fell off a cliff there. Yeah.
Anyways, I think we're pushing an hour, more or less, and that's more or less, that's kind of how long I want these podcasts to be. So I think I'm going to stop recording. Is there anything else?
No, let's keep going, man. Let's keep going. I got a cigar.
Well, we can keep going, but we don't have to record everything, do we?
Yeah, no, record everything. And then there might be some, because, you know,
that's all right. a terrible way to... Okay, well, then I'm going to rely on you for the next topic. What do you want to talk about?
Do you think, here we go. Here's a thought experiment for you. So we got Jeff Bezos, Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So say if I make a competing Amazon called decentralized Amazon.
Yes.
In which the producers, it's a bit like, you know, there's Andreas, remember those Andreas talks where you talk about Uber, like decentralized Uber,
mm-hmm.
where the taxi drivers make like 99.9% of the, of what they produce. Mm-hmm. They get the value for it. And then 0.1% or something goes to bounties for this decentralized piece of software which manages the Uber drivers.
Yes.
Well, like, say if I make that for Amazon and I make decentralized Amazon and like the producers of the stuff, completely hypothetical, probably a load of bollocks, could never happen. The producers of, they get more, less of it goes to, you know, Jeff Bezos. Amazon itself is just a piece of clever software. It's more like a Open Bazaar, if Open Bazaar were good, and then, you know, as efficient as Amazon, it'd be like that. And all right, so you've got the two services exist, decentralized Amazon and normal Amazon. The hypothetical thought experiment.
Mm-hmm.
The products on both of those Amazons cost exactly the same. They have the exact same products. I know it's bollocks. They have the exact same products. You're sat at your computer and you're going to buy, I don't know, some vodka. I don't know. You're going to buy something over Amazon. Which one are you going to shop at?
I mean, if it's exactly the same in every way, including surface and, you know, possible. If it's the same, I'd use the open source version, of course.
Of course. Why?
Ideology.
But why is that better? Why do you understand that the one without Jeff Bezos is better?
I guess because I would feel that money is going to whoever's producing it more, apparently, because it's not going to one guy, so it must be going to a more decentralized group of people.
See, so you're advocating that the means of production should be more socialized, should be decentralized.
If the Bezos version would be cheaper, then I'd be fine with that as well. However, I think it's
viable. That's an option in my experiment.
No, I know, but I'm just pointing that out. But I think it's viable that the open source version would be cheaper, right? Because there's no Bezos to pay. So I think that's a very interesting future.
And also, I mean, there's this
really takes off.
There's this myth that like a free labor market is what causes productivity. Whereas, as we see again with free and open source stuff, like you can have immense productivity if people feel valued and that, you know, their contribution isn't just going to kind of get claimed by their boss.
Mm.
Then that system can be more energized and more productive.
Right.
If it's done properly, I don't know, who knows how to do it? It's hard. Like, cooperatives are terrible. Like, they're really hard to manage. It's much easier to have someone just at the top barking down orders. It works better, you know?
Yeah.
Slavery works so well.
I'm quite on board. So I, in general, I am quite on board with the whole free market thing. The counter argument that I sometimes have trouble with is sort of natural monopolies, because I'm not so convinced that monopolies always happen in every market, but sometimes they can happen, you know, when a network effect is an issue. And I think that's a problem that libertarians like to ignore. But I also think that's something that could be tackled by free and open source software. Like, that's the sort of competition that could win, that could beat natural monopolies, because it could also become a natural monopoly, but cheaper, because there is no big boss to pay.
Yeah,
that's, and like, kind of your point.
It's a monopoly. So say, like, when you say Bitcoin, you know, it's free market money. And it's not. It's free market money. We want it to be the free market money killer. We don't want any other source of money out there. We want Bitcoin. We want Bitcoin to completely monopolize and destroy the free markets of money. That's what we're designing it for, to be the best money. So it would just destroy the free market of money.
Yes.
And then why would...
Yes, that's a good way to put it, if you don't see Bitcoin as free market money, which, as I pointed out earlier, is reasonable, I think. It's something different. It's not Hayek's original idea.
It's okay monopoly. Like, if Libra... But if, say LibraCoin, for example, which actually I'm not probably not as against as other people are, because I think that their federated model, if it worked and you had lots of, you know, all these nodes or whatever, hundreds and hundreds of them, that it would be decentralized-ish and it'd be pretty steady for people. So it might be give people better money. But anyway, if LibraCoin were the monopoly of monies, if that's what everyone used, then we'd probably be against it, because it has, like,
yes,
areas of centralization.
Right.
Like, we want decentralization, don't we?
Well, definitely when it comes to money.
Yeah. So, and we understand as well that sometimes in a free, like the free market of encyclopedias, you know, that's not doing so well. Like, Wikipedia's kind of monopolized that market.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Good. But because it's a free and open source system where you can all contribute and whatever else, like, it's all right. You know, we don't mind that monopoly. Like, it's like the if all web servers on the planet were run by, you know, 1990s Microsoft, then that would be, we would think of it as an attack vector, and we wouldn't like it, and we'd complain about it. But if all web servers on the planet are, like, Linux-based, which they are pretty much, like 90% of them or something,
mm-hmm,
then that's a good monopoly.
Right.
Why is it a good monopoly? Well, it's because that no central party controls it and has control over it. It's controlled by users. It's controlled by the people who actually use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can all contribute to it. So that just ethos and we just naturally understand that kind of monopoly is okay. And
yes.
But a monopoly which is owned by someone like Jeff Bezos isn't okay, or is owned by, you know, Bill Gates or whoever else isn't okay. Bill Gates is getting it bad at the moment, isn't he?
With the vaccines?
Yeah, well, he's just getting attacked, isn't he, at the moment? He's just, there's a lot of hatred out for Bill, I noticed.
A lot of distrust.
I saw Saifedean tweet. I mean, I Saifedean banned me a long time ago, but I saw Saifedean tweet against
Bill. You saw it because Michael Foxen retweeted it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, yeah, because he recently got, so now he's become like the medium for Saifedean tweets. He's got another account tweeting out Saifedean tweets. But yeah, he's under fire at the moment for supporting the WHO.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't really kept up with the Bill Gates part of the story.
Maybe not.
Do you think we're going to see universal basic income? Is that something you support?
I mean, it's a band-aid. Like, if people can't afford to live, then I'm not sure that government and state handing out money to people is the best way to kind of fix that problem, you know. I think it's a band-aid to a broken or a breaking system. So this was, if we go back to Marx, this was his main point was, you know, capitalism's great, it's great, but it's got these fundamental flaws which will cause it to break eventually. And then the question is now, how do you delay it breaking and keep it working? And one way would be something like universal basic income. So, yeah, I don't really know where I stand on it. I mean, I like the idea of people, because there have been societies, it's a foreign concept to us, but there has been societies where people didn't have to work in the past and they're pretty successful. Like slave societies, like Greece, ancient Greece, you know, they didn't work.
Well, the slaves Greeks didn't
work. The slaves worked. Yeah, they didn't, but the Greeks didn't work.
Right.
And they just sat around, they had orgies, they ate grapes, and they came up with politics and science and whatever else because they had all that free time on their hands, so they didn't have to work. So there have been societies which didn't have to work in the past, and then hopefully we'll get there again with robots or something, or, you know, us being able to produce things and like things like 3D printers or whatever else. Like maybe we can produce things in a way where people don't have to work and they can just work on things which they're interested in, the betterment of whatever. But I'm not sure universal basic income is the way to, who knows? I mean, I don't know. It's a complicated one. It'd be an interesting experiment, and it would benefit a lot of people. Like it would free a lot of people up to have that kind of Greek experience where they have time just to cost.
Are they talking about it in England at all or in UK?
UBI. I mean, it's been there in the background for a while, you know,
sure.
There's been had a lot of supporters for it, but I don't think it's like, I mean, maybe this coronavirus thing makes it seem like more of an attractive proposition. What about, where are you at the moment? Are you in Netherlands?
Yeah, Netherlands.
So I don't mean to upset you there. Sorry.
No, people know. That's fine. I'm in Utrecht. It's not a secret.
What's it like in Netherlands? Is it a concept which is...
They call it an intelligent lockdown over here. So we're allowed to go out, but not in groups, like max two outside. And some stores are open, but other than that, I mean, there are, of course, the Vital stores and some other stores. So it's not like in Italy where people aren't even allowed to go out, but, you know, pretty close. Bad. What about over there?
Yeah, I mean, here it's, I mean, it depends where you are. I mean, where we are, you know, we can go to the beach and we can like walk around and walk around the hills and look at sheep and whatever else. But I mean, if you're in some city somewhere, then I think you just can't take the piss. You know, you have to have kind of a reason to be out. You know, you're doing some exercise or something.
Right.
It is dangerous. It's the amount of power which is being given to state in this scenario is very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need to be vigilant to kind of make sure we can claw back that.
Yeah.
Once we get through Corona, but I'm not sure when that will happen.
Are they being transparent, or what's the strategy in the UK now? They were the first to publicly announce herd immunity.
I mean, so we had we kind of fluffed it to begin with. So we had this concept of like, herd immunity. I think they were just kind of burying their head in the sand and they just wanted the country to carry on running for a little bit longer until they had to kind of worry. Because quarantining, this is what a lot of people don't understand about the quarantining thing. They think that now, you know, in some countries, the curve is flattening,
mm-hmm.
And they're able to deal with the healthcare problems. And they think because of that, people can be let out and we can start restoring normality. But the reality is that we're dealing with the cases of people who've been infected, you know, before quarantining.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you start letting people out, people start getting sick and then health services will start being overwhelmed again. So it's really a case of governments, countries, they need to just stop people getting sick. So, okay, everyone stay at home. We haven't thought any further than that. We'll pretend that we have thought further than that, but we haven't thought any further than that. So I can't see that quarantine is going to end. And it's like, this is the year now at least. And then maybe it'll be like a tap. You'll be let out, people get infected, and then they'll just try and keep it steady, the amount of infections. Boris's government were kind of in denial for quite a while. He even advised everyone just to like go to Cheltenham, which is this big horse racing festival thing we have here in the UK, like 10,000 people or something. And it was like 3 days later, then he was like, no, no, shit, we got to quarantine things. And then he got infected, which I'm not too sure he got infected and he had COVID. I actually think that Boris is, so in the UK, we had in the 90s, we had a movement called New Labour. So in the UK, we have Labour and Conservative. Conservative are kind of like, you know, all for markets and, you know, neoliberal types. Mm. And then Labour are more kind of socialist-y. And then in the 90s, so Labour could get voted in, Tony Blair came up with this concept of New Labour, which is kind of like a conservative Labour.
It was like that.
So they were a Labour. Right? Pardon?
It's like the third way, end of history kind of thing.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And they were really successful. And Tony Blair's New Labour, they were in for ages. And the only reason he kind of got chucked out really is because of all the Iraq stuff and the Holy War. Him and Bush's and their Holy War. So I think Boris has kind of realised that, and he's got a good excuse now, if he makes kind of a lefty conservative party, they could have this. They could have the same scenario, like that third way. They could just stay in power. So Boris is now very pro NHS and public funding. Like when he was mayor of London, he was pretty good for infrastructure and public utilities. So I think he probably is kind of a bit of a, he's sort of on the left side of conservative. So I think he's trying to reshape the Conservative Party to be a bit more lefty now. But I think the catalyst is this whole Corona, you know, crisis.
Yeah, he won all the north of England, right, for the first time ever, basically.
Yeah, they all voted for him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was the Brexit vote.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they all, because I was this, you know, which I wasn't for, but there was this Brexit vote, which kind of made all these people who historically always voted Labour vote Conservative. But now it means that a lot of their constituents are, you know, Labour socialist-y types. So they have to, you know, listen to their vote, I suppose.
Right. Is there any talk of Wales getting out of the UK? Like Scotland?
Well, man, like, Welsh independence, I've always been for Welsh independence, because Welsh nationalism, like Scottish nationalism as well, it's not the kind of, you know, the racist kind of nationalism, far right nationalism you get from other countries. It's very much they don't want to be governed by London. They want to have sort of just control over their own country, but in a way which isn't excluding other people from their countries. You know, they don't want to like get rid of immigrants or anything like that.
Right.
It's a softer kind of nationalism. And the Welsh nationalist movement was very fringe, but post Brexit it's more and more becoming like a real, and same with the Scots as well. Like I could imagine a scenario post Corona. Well, I suppose it depends what Boris does with the Conservatives, but I could imagine a scenario post Corona where Scotland breaks away, joins the EU, Wales breaks away, joins the EU, and then England.
Well, the EU is breaking apart as well.
Yeah, it's dangerous, man. This is all like...
There's a lot of tension right now between different countries in the EU on how to deal with this virus and who gets paid by who and who needs to fund what.
There's two ways you can go. There's like, you can all work together and try and solve this dead complicated problem, or you can just start blaming each other and then like have strong borders, start producing your own shit, and then, you know, don't help out any of the countries. And sadly, because the, you know, the richest country on the planet, the US, is going more of the, you know, the self-preservation way, you know, it means that it's going to encourage all these other countries to do the same. So it's very like, Europe's fucked, man. Like, we had two wars in very close succession, and the only reason we didn't have another war was because of things like the EU. And we can you imagine like a Europe with strong borders, with nationalist leaders, with economic wars, with their own currencies? Can you imagine how long that would last?
The borders already closing. A lot of borders are just literally closing right now. The border between the Netherlands and Belgium is closed, which is crazy in my mind. Like, the, wow. How is that border closed? That's never been closed, as far as I know. You know, when was the last time?
I mean, like, because we traveled around Europe quite a lot, and one of the greatest things about it was you can just, like, a lot of borders you can just drive through. We're like Belgium and Netherlands, there's no border, you can just drive through,
right?
You know, wave at the guy in the box or whatever. And it's like how borders are supposed to be, you know, freedom of movement, freedom of association, people go wherever they want to go.
Yeah, well, I do think it makes sense that they're closed now, given the some circumstances. I do think travel restrictions are probably a good idea.
Yeah, but again, though, like, that's not terribly libertarian, is it? Is it?
Maybe not, but it's also not anti-libertarian, I would say. You know, people are still free to leave. You're just telling people, you know, if you want to come here, you can't right now, or you got to go in quarantine. I think that's reasonable given the circumstances. It's kind of like telling someone, what's that?
How do you feel about, because it's kind of like ekes towards the Citadel thesis, doesn't it? That we'll all just like become more and more insular and to the point where we're just like in our little stronghold.
Yeah.
A lot of Bitcoiners seem to really dig this Citadel concept. I don't really know why.
I mean, yeah, that's to me, funny Citadels are just... because it came from this meme about a time traveler, and this time traveler, it was a warning. He was like warning that if you keep going, then you'll get Citadels and it will be awful. And now it's become this meme that everyone's looking forward to Citadels. So that, yeah, flipped on its head.
It was sort of race towards it. I don't get it. I don't get this the whole Citadel thing, particularly a Bitcoin Citadel. It's just, talk about a honeypot, you know, somewhere you can just like go blow up and then get rid of all the Bitcoins. Your Bitcoin is worth more.
Well, the thing with the closed borders right now and the travel restrictions is that there's a very specific goal for it, which is, you know, you want to get rid of the virus within a specific region, and then you can open the borders with other regions that have done the same. I think that's a reasonable approach. You know, you got to protect yourself somehow from this thing. Unless you
it's
don't
hard though, because it does.
Yeah, unless you don't think it's something you need to protect against. That's what some people seem to think as well. I'm not on that. I do think it's something we should try to do something about. You don't?
No. I think it's an incredibly dangerous virus. But I worry, you know, I like the idea of being advised for social distance each other socially, and for, you know, opted into isolation.
Yes.
People to kind of be given somehow the means to be able to do those things. I don't like the idea of being told that people can't, you know, leave and then people go into prison or whatever.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with it. However, I just don't think travel restrictions necessarily is included in that sort of logic for me. You know, people are free to leave. It's just if you want to come into our country, that's not possible right now because we're trying to keep the virus out. You're free to stay in your country if you're, you know, in a different country, or, you know, we can think of quarantine periods. Just, you're not forcing people into anything. They can stay where they are, or they can stay here and or leave. It's just if you want to come, that's the only problem, sort of.
Yeah. No, it's a very tricky one, and it is. I mean, it is. It's like with the you know, the free markets fix everything lot, the sort of Giacomo Zuccos. I mean, it could be a time where I'm like, yeah, you know, like I really sort of point out the flaws in that approach to trying to fix big problems. And we think coronavirus is a big problem. You know, we haven't even got anywhere near climate change and impending nuclear war, which probably happened at some point. But it could be like an opportunity for me to, you know, really rant on and say, I told you so a bunch of times that some of these big problems need to be approached with more joined up thinking, and it can't just be fixed by free markets. But it's like, I prefer not to be put in that position where I can say, I told you so, you know, like,
sure.
I prefer for them to be right.
Well, I think the other distinction is that even if it can't be solved by free markets, it might still be solved by three people, right?
Hmm.
Even if it's not market dynamics that are solving a problem per se, it could still be three people. That a libertarian would be fine with that. Giacomo would be fine with it.
Yeah.
However, you're seeing a lot of, I feel like these sort of libertarians tend to deny problems that they don't see the market solving.
Yeah.
Or they come up with a solution that to me sounds very utopian and maybe unrealistic, like hospitals will all run on donations. I'm just not very convinced that it would really work. It would be nice.
There is a definite pattern that, like, any big problem which requires, I mean, it kind of annoys me, you know, when you get like a Jimmy Song who, you know, claims the free market will fix anything. But then whenever there's a complicated problem, like climate change or something like the coronavirus, rather than try and meet the problem head on and try and figure out how a free market could fix that problem, they just deny that the problem exists.
Yes, exactly. That does seem to be a bit of a trend sometimes.
Yeah, it's a pattern. And it's a shame because it's kind of an opportunity for them to like think outside the box and think, okay, how are we going to tackle this bigger problem? And then, you know, they kind of have an egg on their face as well then when everyone starts getting sick and, you know, they're proven wrong just by the actual scenario yes. playing out.
Yes. Well, some people are still denying that this is a real problem. And I at some point that has to stop, right? How long? You can't keep doing that indefinitely, no. I would say. But it's still happening. Well, you know, we're recording this on the 30th of April. That seems way overdue to still be denying the problem to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sadly as well, I mean, the people who have been denying it more and more, they're the people who haven't really been affected by it. Because they're in areas where they haven't had really an infection rate. So sadly, like, the denial becomes less. Like, if they see people within their Dunbar number getting very ill and, like, people they know and love
right.
dying, then the denial kind of falls by the wayside, which is sad. Like,
yeah, it's a bit too late then.
You don't want them to be proved wrong that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, you know, you watch those documentaries about some native tribe getting taken out by the cold virus. Well, it's basically us. Like, we've been hit with this virus, which we haven't got an immunity, we can't deal with, you know, physically. It's just going to ravage humanity, kill loads of us, and it's going to suck. Our best hope is that we quarantine so we can kind of mitigate through medicine or maybe a vaccine one day. But all those things are very hard to kind of come by.
Yeah. All right.
Let's call it quits.
Yeah, I think so. Unless there's another topic you think we... Do you have in mind?
Bitcoin conferences. When are we going to be back at Bitcoin conferences?
Oh, man, I miss these things.
We like the Bitcoin conferences, man. It's like our... You know, we get to go away and yes. party with our friends. And
yeah, the last one I've been to, I think, may have been Berlin, where we hang out for a while. I think that was my last one. That was October, right?
Oh, that was the Lightning one, yeah.
Yeah, the Lightning one.
Advancing Bitcoin got in there just before it all kicked off.
Bitcoin. I didn't get a press pass for that one. Leon didn't give me a press pass, unfortunately. I don't blame him because I was early last year and I didn't write an article that time. I started writing an article, but then it was one of these articles that wasn't really working for me. And then other things, you know, came along and it just, you know, one of it's in my folder of sort of work in progress articles that I'll never finish. Exactly. So then I applied
it again. It's after a while, it's just kind of seems pointless because the conference was so long ago.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, sure. Yeah. So I'm definitely, yeah. No, I was gonna make a. What's that?
Leon's conferences are great. The Advancing Bitcoin. It's a good, it's a fantastic conference. I'm stoked I managed to go there before it all kicked off.
Yeah, very high quality.
Get one last. When do you think we'll be let out of our quarantine and be able to go traveling around the world on planes again to all these different conferences?
Oh, I think Maybe. I don't know. I don't think the herd immunity strategy is going to work at all, frankly, which is what they're still doing in the Netherlands as well. I think it's just a dead end. It's just it's never going to, because by the time the first group, by the time everyone supposedly should have herd immunity, and then I'm ignoring like all of the personal dramas of people dying and all of that, by the time you would reach herd immunity, the most recent data suggests that the first group would not be immune anymore. So, because there's just no immunity, allegedly, not long term. You know, it's all very early data, so maybe it's wrong, but that's sort of what the most recent data suggests. So I just think it's a complete dead end.
I mean,
if it's a dead end, it would take years. It would take 3 years or something like that. And that's assuming it will work at all. So I think at some point they're going to have to make a decision. Are they actually going to try to contain this virus? Sort of do what they're doing in Asia? It's just Asia had a huge head start because they were doing it from the start. And we'd have to start while the virus is already wildly spread among all of us. So are we still going to go that route, or are we somehow just going to ignore the virus altogether and just accept that people are going to be in trouble? Or is there going to be a vaccine or something? Right now on the current strategy, there's not going to be a conference anytime soon. Unfortunately.
No, I do miss them. Yeah, no, it's it's sad and it's very hard. There's the economic fallout as well, because I imagine, we're heading towards a depression. We're not heading to just a recession.
Yeah,
you've got multiple markets crashing. In the UK, the housing market, that's our biggest threat. Everything's pegged to houses, and there's a guy who wrote, do you ever read Bitcoin, The Future of Money? It's by a guy called, what's his name? He wrote a really good money on tax recently called Daylight Robbery.
It ends with a question mark, right? Bitcoin, The Future of Money, with a question mark?
Yeah.
Is it Frisbee or something like that?
That's it, Dominic Frisbee.
I read
He's like, he's as far right a libertarian as you're gonna meet, you know? But he actually has some really good content, which I enjoy. And one of his videos he made recently was divorce, destitution, and death. No, death, destitution, and divorce. And it was all based on this obscure, like, 90s film where Joe Pesci plays this slum landlord. And someone in it asks him what he looks for in a house when he's buying a house. And you think he's going to say location, 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 but he says divorce, destitution, and death, because that's what brings cheap houses onto a market. You know, if someone dies, someone gets divorced, someone's destitute. And then Dominic Frisbee was just saying that, you know, we've got that times 1,000 with Corona in our housing market. There's going to be a lot of death, a lot of divorce, a lot of destitution, and the housing market's going to crash because of it. Which is very scary. I mean, you look at 2008, and that was housing market crashing,
right?
And banks not being able to claim on mortgages, and that was one Jenga block,
right?
And we've got many Jenga blocks all being pulled out at the same time now, so it is really quite terrifying.
Interesting times ahead, that's for sure. Yeah.
All we can do, I think, as Bitcoiners, is just try and because I do think that, again, you know, going back to Keynes, you know, there was a reason that after World War II, or the end of World War II, there was a new economic order which came about from that, you know. And I think that potentially, you know, I think this is something to look forward to with the halving. There's going to be all these people sat on their laptops learning about Bitcoin, learning about, in very unstable times, something quite stable which is happening, which is the halving, and something you can predict. And I think it is a good argument for something like Bitcoin, you know? So, rocky times ahead. On that somber and sad note, we should probably call it quits.
Let's do that. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, it was nice speaking to you, man.
Yeah, you too.
I'll see you again. Cheers.